Hi, this is Cynthia Davis. We've all heard many different theories on how to stop abortion, but on our show today, we get straight to the root. Instead of fighting over how to pass new laws that get tangled up in the court system, we talk about the solutions that go straight to the heart.
I'm an American.
Welcome to Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host, and I'm here to help. From parenting to public policies to political advice, join me in taking America back one family at a time. As a speaker, writer, former legislator, mother of seven, and wife of one for over 30 years, I bring you my experience.
Don't lose your freedom.
And now it's time for Homefront.
Don't lose your freedom. Let's talk about it.
Welcome to Homefront. Today we have Judah Myers. Judah is the founder and president of Choices for Life, an organization established as a way to promote and restore honor and dignity to women and children of rape, conception through assault or incest. So welcome, Judah.
Thanks so much, Cynthia. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, you have an amazing story, and you have an amazing way of helping people in a very special segment of society. So I want you to tell us your story and give us the genesis of where did Choices for Life come from?
Well, we have a short period of time, so I'm going to try to be brief, but it started because I was adopted and wanted to find out where did I come from, like anybody else would like to know. And when I found out, it first off wasn't a very pleasant thing. I had to fight to get my records. And the social worker for the agency really didn't want to give me the records, even though my mother would later tell me that she had sent a letter wanting to meet me if that would be okay with me. So I fought this system and ended up with a court order demanding that I have the records, but they never gave me the records. I sat in front of a social worker who talked with me for about an hour. And then she said, well, if you're going to find your mother, you need to know about the father. And I had never really given him any thought. It was mostly my mom that I wanted to know about. And then she leans over literally like she was going to throw up on me. And she said, your mother was raped. And from that point on, I don't remember anything. It was so traumatic. I felt like a brick had been slammed into my face. And if you held a gun to my head right now and you said, you have to tell me how you got from her desk to your car, I would be dead because it is a complete blank. I have no idea. I was traumatized. I was hurt. I heard demonic voices in my head, which I'd never heard before, just telling me that I needed to slash my wrists and let all that rapist blood flow out because nobody cared about me. Nobody wanted me. God didn't even have anything to do with my existence. And I was a Christian at that point, and I was crying so hard I couldn't see. I was alone in a car. My husband was waiting at the airport for me. And it was just horrible. So I remember saying, involuntarily, I can't do that because I belong to Christ. And at that moment, everything stopped, all the voices, everything. But I felt like I couldn't live and I couldn't die. Well, the next day I had a song, because I'm a songwriter. I had a song that I was going to have recorded, and I needed to have this lady help me write the music. So I go to her home, and she wanted me to hear some other songs she had worked on. And it seemed to me that these songs that she was playing for me were about losing and using women. And that's just what I heard. So I just put my head down and started screaming. I was having a nervous breakdown. And she comes over to me, and I see myself in a vision just in a black hole, just falling. So she comes up to me and she says, "Judah, I don't know what's going on with you, but God knew you before you were ever conceived." And at that very moment, in this whatever was happening to me, I see a vision of a hand reaching down and grabbing my arm and pulling me into the light. And I lifted my head and I said, "I believe you." And at that point, I knew who I was. I knew that I was here, not by the will of a man, not by the desire of a woman, but I was here because my Creator decided that I would be the best thing for a woman who had been attacked. He doesn't sanction rape, but He is the author of life. So at that point, I was alive again. I was alive in Him. And then I sought to meet my mom. So it would take a while. It took 2 years, but I was sitting on the couch and I was listening to a show called Three Wishes with Amy Grant. It lasted for just a very short period. And I saw that there was an agency that helped a woman find her birth mother. I called them up, make a long story short. They found an address. I did research. I ended up finding where she was based on court records, but then I didn't know exactly where she was. I'd found records of my birth aunt, and I called her, and it was kind of a game because she knew who I was and I knew that she knew, but I wouldn't say it. It was kind of a game that I had a message from my mother who just had died. That was my adopted mom, for Ann Phillips. So when my aunt asks, "So how did your mom know Ann?" When I said Louisiana, it was dead silent. Well, I learned in sales class that the first one to speak would be the one to lose. So I just kept silent, and it was so horribly awkward. But she finally said she was going to tell her husband and we could talk. I hung up the phone. I had no sense of ever finding my mother. Well, my aunt had told my mother, and my mother called me one day. It was December 7th. We ended up talking, and it was just amazing because she was at a nursing home. And when I called, she couldn't hear me because there was a choir singing in the background. This choir, when I said, "I think as far as I know, I think you're my mother," the choir in the background was singing, "Gloria." I just knew the whole heavens were celebrating with me. And then I flew out that day and I met my mom. And nothing prepared me for how wonderful that meeting was going to be. You know, Cynthia, have you ever heard of people saying a mother couldn't possibly look at that child?
Well, I'm not an expert on rape, but I'm going to tell you this much. There's something important and truly just about reuniting moms and their children. When I was in the Missouri State Legislature, I went to an event and I met a man who was born in 1926. And he told me he was born in a home for unwed mothers in Kansas City, and he wanted to know who his mother was. And he explained that the state of Missouri prohibits people from having access to their original birth certificates. And when he explained that to me, I understood the importance and truly the justice of allowing children to see their birth certificate, their original birth certificate, because the ones you get when you've been adopted are fabricated. It's a falsehood. It's not a true statement. And so I committed my time to trying to allow people to get their original birth certificates. And that goes directly to the humanity of the individual. And the efforts to promote abortion have been all based on the idea that human beings are not endowed with any rights until after they're born. And in this case, we are denying him the right to his origins when we say everyone else has a right to their original birth certificate, but not you. And at that point, I realized, wait a second, we're putting the protection of the mother above the protection of the child. And if they're both equal human beings, then the child should have the right to see that as much as the mother. And if mom doesn't want the baby to see it, that's only her rights. What about the rights of the child? Thankfully, in Missouri, we did eventually enact laws that allowed people to see their original birth certificate. But I don't understand all the opposition and all the people who are feeling like it's their duty to deny somebody the information that's their information.
Exactly. Exactly. And thank you so much for doing that, because already when children are adopted, I know my parents were constantly telling me about how special I was to have two sets of parents. But, you know, deep inside, you wonder about the rejection. You feel like you're not worthy. You're a second-class citizen. People will mock you. And, you know, when I grew up, I was like one of the only people who were adopted. And so people made fun of me. Why didn't your parents want you? You know, this kind of horrible treatment by children. And I'm sure by adults, too, because where do children learn these things but by adults? And, you know, when I found out, when I met my mom and I learned the whole story, you know, it was devastating to me. But, you know, I asked, I said, so tell me, if you don't mind, what was the circumstances of my conception? Well, she was in a wheelchair and I was kneeling down next to her. And she just said, you know, I was taken to a movie. Because I was a nanny, it was my night off. They took me to the movies. I was out late and they couldn't come pick me up because they had been drinking. So I started walking home. And on a street corner in St. Louis, she saw these eight guys, shirtless, nothing to do, on a street corner in St. Anne's community. It was a used car lot. And they beat her up, they raped her. And they left her for dead. And she laid there for, she doesn't even remember how long, because she was so afraid that if she moved, they would come back to finish the job. And then, you know, I just burst out crying. I put my head in her lap. And how horrible. I mean, just, there is no way, no words, no anything to describe the feeling of what someone had to go through to get you into this world. There just is no words. So I put my head in her lap and she patted me and she said, honey, stop your crying. I've forgiven those men. And look what God has done. He's brought you back to me. God is faithful. Well, when you have a mom like that, there's no way that I could not forgive. And there's no way that I could stay in that feeling of depression. And I was here on purpose, and my mother knew I was here on purpose. She had to fight the doctor who said, oh, I'll take care of it. And this was back in 1956 when she got pregnant, and I was born on February 14th of 57. So abortion wasn't, quote, legal in that time, but they were doing them. So the doctor told her, oh, I'll take care of it. And she told me, I wish I had a recording of her telling me this and seeing her face. She said, I told him, you will not take care of it because it is my baby. Wow. Wow. My mom's a hero. And all those moms out there who are fighting society, fighting their doctor, fighting their parents, because my mother had to fight her parents because they wanted me dead. And she placed me for adoption to save my life again from them. And so for 48 years, she prayed to God that he would bring me back to her. When she was in this home for unwed mothers, there was an older woman who snuck me in to see her. She wasn't allowed to do that, but my mom said she got to see me every single day for 2 weeks. And then when I was 3 months old, I was adopted, and that same woman took a picture of me, and she gave it to my mom. She sent it to my mom, and she said, your little girl has been adopted into a really good family, and you have nothing to worry about. When I met my mom, She was holding that picture of when I was 3 months old. Now, lots of people say there's no way that a woman could bear to look at a child conceived in rape. My mother was looking at that picture every single day for 48 years. What you hear is not what moms are saying. It's what people think. I've heard mothers who were pregnant, they saw the pregnancy test and they said, oh, I've got to get rid of it. And in the same breath, they turned around and they said, no, this is my baby. And that rapist took my body, but not my baby. So I want people to know our mothers love us and they're willing to fight for us. And there are some of them that are so hurt that they just go along with the family, but they regret having abortions after rape more than the people that I have seen and talked to who haven't been raped and had an abortion.
I would concur with that. I asked my husband one time, if I were raped and conceived of a baby, would you want me to get an abortion? And he said, no. And I asked him, why not? And he said, because that'd be your baby, Cynthia. You'd be killing your own baby. That's counterintuitive.
Give him a huge hug for me. No, and there are wonderful men like him. I've helped several women and talked to several women who have the most amazing husbands, who are fathers and protectors and lovers of those children.
Yeah. And if I were working in that hospital, the home for unwed mothers, I would bring the baby in to see the mom every day, too, because even at that young age, for the first 2 weeks of your life, you probably knew you were with your mother.
There's always that connection.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you about legislation. There are a lot of bills that are designed to be pro-life, and yet they put in exceptions for rape and incest. I remember a few years ago when there was a state in the South that had a, I think it was Alabama, that had a law that the voters were going to vote on, and it failed. And the reason the analysts said it failed is because they didn't have an exception for rape and incest. So I'd like to get your opinion on that. And I also want you to clarify for us, even though they always say rape and incest together, I don't think they're different. I think all incest is rape, because they're really taking somebody who is a minor at that point. Explain your thoughts on that rape and incest exception.
Well, let me say first off that nobody is, well, it used to be that they were executed for rape, but in this day and age, they're not. To say rape and incest means that you find incest even more disgusting. So you're even putting incest into a completely different category from rape. And it is rape. It is rape of the most horrid type. But it is the children across the entire planet that are being treated as if they are the ones who are somehow less human than even a rapist. Because, you know, most times we know the difference between rape and murder, correct? But here we're going to say it's okay to murder an innocent person who wasn't even at the crime scene ever, you know? They weren't at the crime scene. Yet you're going to go into the future and you're going to murder a person that had nothing to do with the crime whatsoever. But you're going to let the rapist go free. You're going to insult a mother because that's her child too, and somehow her child deserves to be killed. See, when you call yourself pro-life, but you have exceptions, basically what you are is pro-choice with fewer choices, because you stand hand in hand with the abortionist who is going to murder an innocent person. And so a lot of these pro-life bills, I'm really upset with the people because they've actually told me at times that I'm selfish for wanting to have no exceptions, which I can't even comment. I don't even have a clue what that means. I had one person look at me who's the leader of a Right to Life group. And she said, with tears in her eyes, she said, Judah, we can't pass bills without exceptions. Okay, our goal is not to pass bills. This is unless you are a career person who is in the pro-life industry, our goal is not passing bills. Our goal is to protect all humans in the womb. All humans who are innocent deserve protection. It is not good for a mother to have an abortion, whether she's pregnant by rape or otherwise. It's not good. In fact, my mother told me that I was healing for her. And I've heard this over and over and over. And I've heard over 300 mothers tell me about their situation. 17 of the ones that I talked to had abortions in cases of rape. Out of the 17, 14 had been suicidal. Out of the 14, three of those had actually attempted suicide and failed. One woman who was a police officer, she had gone into an area where she shouldn't have gone without backup. She was raped by two men. Her colleagues and everybody else around her said that the best thing to do was to have an abortion and forget about it. She had an abortion, and later she wakes up and thinks, I'm worse than a rapist. I know the difference between rape and murder. I am a murderer. And she basically destroyed her life. She stopped being a police officer. She became bulimic and anorexic and just all kinds of self-destruction, and ended up, because I told her that Christ died on the cross so that she could receive forgiveness. She didn't want to hear it because she felt she was unworthy of his forgiveness, and she stopped talking to me. That's how bad abortion in cases of rape is.
So tell us about the differences between the abolitionists and the other Right to Life folks. Why is there a division, and why can't we all get to the same starting point and hopefully get to the same end point?
Great question. So the pro-life movement has been going on for, say, 52 years because abortion started in Mississippi on Mother's Day. Legislators went and signed a bill that allowed mothers to kill their babies if they had the rape card. No questions asked. Nobody did anything. Then it goes to Colorado in 67, and then New York and Hawaii, and it just spread like wildfire until Texas allowed the Supreme Court, which they are not allowed to do. So technically, abortion isn't legal because the Supreme Court is not a lawmaker. Only Congress is allowed to make law, but somehow that got slipped through. So here we are in cases of rape again. That's the platform that was used in Roe v. Wade. So why do pro-lifers go and push bills that says you can murder your baby if you see a sonogram? You can murder your baby if you can't hear a heartbeat. You can murder your baby if it doesn't feel pain. You can murder your baby if. And I went to Louisiana to lobby for a bill that would abolish all abortions. And the Right to Life leader told me, Judah, it's not the time. And at that point, I couldn't believe he said that to me. When is it the time that we stop the murder of innocent people in the womb? So the abolitionists, they believe that there shouldn't be any exceptions for any reasons, because we are promoting abortions because you can always get by with it. There's always a loophole, and it doesn't stop abortions. If we made abortion illegal, then it would stop. It won't stop everything because, you know, we have laws against rape. We have laws against murder. We have laws against stealing. Does that still happen? Absolutely. Do we punish them? Absolutely. Does it make some people think twice? You know, I know people who are alive today because their mother couldn't get an abortion. They were law-abiding citizens. So the abolitionists, they want no abortions made legal. They want to reverse the Roe v. Wade. But then you've got people like Abby Johnson, who is now saying that she does not want mothers to be prosecuted, so she'll never support a bill that abolishes abortion if it criminalizes the woman. So you've got people who make a lot of money in the pro-life movement who would lose their career if they no longer had abortion to fight. And I know that sounds very harsh, but, you know, after being told straight to my face, it's not the time, we're not going to support an abortion abolitionist bill, I don't know what else to think, because literally their careers would end. They would not have anything. So,
well, I think we need to have that conversation, because the problem is we're about 50 years too late to even talk about this. I can't believe it's 2019 and there are a lot of innocent legislators who just want to do the right thing, and they do want to stop abortion. They don't know how to do it, myself included. I would have loved to have filed a bill making abortion illegal in Missouri when I had the opportunity. But you're right. I was advised that we don't do that. And it confused me terribly.
Yeah.
And here we are. I think, though, we needed more education about, at the time, we thought, well, the incremental approach is better than nothing. We can't get it all. If we go for it all and it goes to the Supreme Court and we lose, then that's going to set the pro-life movement back 20 years.
But it wouldn't really, because if everyone, you know, like 650,000 people marched in D.C. for the March for Life, if every one of those people would stand up against legislators and say, we're not going to vote you back in if you do not put through an abortion abolitionist bill. If you do not abolish abortion, we're not having anything to do with you. By now, it would have been done, because Horatio Storer, back in the 1800s, in 1857, he put a petition together. He was the president of the American Medical Association. People don't really know this. So Horatio Storer, he petitioned the government. So in 1873, most of the American territories had banned abortion, because this is a doctor. He said that it was, quote, a heinous destruction of human life. So back in 1873, they knew that abortion was killing a human being, before sonograms, before any of the technology that we have today. So fast forward in 1973, 100 years to the year, and all of a sudden we have abortion on demand. So if it took Horatio Storer around 20 years to get it abolished, what could more than 500,000 people do? What about 1 million people? There are a lot of Christians who say they're anti-abortion. What if we had every single person who says that they believe in the God of all creation? What if we all stood hand in hand and we said, we're going to abolish abortion. We're not going to make a loophole. What if we fought for 20 years doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over, and we lost, but in the 21st year, abortion was ended? We would not be 52 years later fighting this, pretending we're fighting. To me, this fight looks like pro wrestling. It looks like all for show, and nothing's getting done except the actors are getting paid.
Well, we have to stop fighting amongst ourselves before we can confront the true enemy.
Well, see, if we have to fight, like, I believe in abortion abolition. I believe that there shouldn't be any exceptions for anything. So how do I get people who want to put in loopholes? How do I get them to understand that when you put an exception in, especially for rape, you're basically wanting me to join you for the genocide of my peers? In fact, I think we should have a lawsuit, the rape conceived, because every time somebody says we need an exception for rape, and incest, you're insulting us worse than any other people group on the planet, because you're telling us that our people group should not even exist, that we need a genocide of that people group, not the people group of rapists, but the people group that were conceived in rape, who were placed in our mother's womb by our God, our creator. We were placed in the womb after the rape occurred. We didn't rape anybody. We didn't do anything. We're not monsters. And what I found that most of my peers are way above the norm. We've got doctors. We've got lawyers. We've got teachers and humanitarian and a Purple Heart recipient and geniuses, literal, a 13-year-old genius. We have so many people. If society could just look at us and stop tagging us with our rapist father tag, because we're not all our fathers. I mean, if you have a bad father, no one should come and kill you because of it. And so my question is, how do I get the quote pro-life movement to stop making exceptions?
That's a great question. And I think we're all owed an answer. I'd like to have you tell us the craziest story you've had go through your hands at your Choices for Life work. What is the one story that topped them all?
Wowie. I have a lot that top. There was a 14-year-old who had three cops, five security guards, a CPS social worker, a hospital social worker, a floor supervisor, the hospital supervisor. I mean, so many people, they came and took me out of the hospital, escorted me out, because they took the 14-year-old's rape-conceived baby from her because CPS deemed it unsafe. Unsafe? She's 14 years old. Fast forward that 3 years later, and the girl has her baby back. She's back living with her grandmother, and it's been proven, and judges have even said what they did, what CPS did, was wrong. But there's this mentality that a mother who conceives in rape will not be able to love that child. I've had several of my clients that were reported by nurses while they were just in the hospital, just having delivered their child. They report them to CPS and say, oh, she was raped. She's not going to be able to love her child. We need to stop this prejudice. Another one, this is like the craziest I've ever had, was a mother was pregnant with twins. And at first she wanted to abort, but then we processed through this. She goes to have the child, and her older daughter, because she was an older woman, her older daughter called CPS, and they pretended that the twins had died. This was a big scheme. The nurse secretly texted me and said the twins are alive and doing well. And I found out that this is a practice that happens quite often. Again, fast forward, the mom didn't believe me when I told her that's what had happened. But finally, she learned the truth, and she was able to get her children back, and she was able to place them for adoption because, like I said, she's an older mom, and she just thought that having a married couple for their parents would be the best for them. But she got the right to choose to do that. But here we have police. They wouldn't even believe me when I reported it. They laughed at me. Police laughed at me. CPS was in on this. The doctor, the nurses. There's a whole lot of evil stuff that goes on that people don't understand. Another time in Arkansas, there were two girls at the same time, two 10-year-olds who had gotten pregnant by rape. One state and another in Arkansas. While one girl was maintaining her school with straight A's and being part of athletics and doing fantastic, this other little 10-year-old, she was forced to be taken down to the abortion clinic in Little Rock by CPS, and they murdered that child. So one child got to live and the other didn't. because of CPS, I'm sorry to say.
Now, for those who don't know, I'll translate. CPS is Children's Protection Services.
Kind of ironic, isn't it?
And these Children's Protective Services are really, you're right, they're not really doing what's always in the best interest of protecting the children. A lot of times they've separated parents from children. Do you know in either of those 10-year-old cases if the parents were supportive of their daughter? And how does a 10-year-old get raped when presumably she's got a mom and or a dad who are protecting her?
In the very first case, the one that lived, the 10-year-old was raped by a 13-year-old cousin. Or I'm sorry, not a cousin, a half brother that was going to be put into custody by CPS. So the stepmom said, oh, I'll take him. The father was not in their life. And so she said, well, I'll take him. She felt sorry for him and didn't realize that he was doing this. So the other 10-year-old, the mother had 7 children, and her boyfriend was the one who raped the 10-year-old. Now, the mother and the daughter were pregnant at the exact same time in that situation. The mother wanted me to help her, but then when I flew to Arkansas to help her, we had attorneys, we had everything that was going to help her, she caved. She said that, quote, they were railroading her, and she did not want to lose her children. So I was not able to help her. And that's where she had to sign the agreement to have that child aborted.
How can a parent do that? In Missouri, at least, the minute there's a positive pregnancy test, the child is instantly emancipated and the only one who's able to make those decisions.
Well, since she was 10, again, Child Protective Services took over. They didn't give the mother any rights, nor the grandmother, any rights to that child. And I asked the mother, I said, why is it that your child gets to live and the 10-year-old's child doesn't? Because they're exactly the same father. So.
Wow, that's just chilling. So what's the biggest challenge you've had to overcome?
Society.
The general disintegration.
The prejudice, the ignorance. Many people will flat out tell me before they know my conception, oh, we've got to have abortion in cases of rape, and mother shouldn't have to deal with that. And then when I say, so you think I deserve to die? Mm-hmm. And they say, well, of course not. Why are you even bringing that up? And I said, because you're talking about people like me. I was conceived in gang rape. And they look at me with such shock. And then some with tears in their eyes, they said, Judah, I never put a face to it. And when we say those words, I don't think people are seeing innocent little babies in mother's arms. You see the monster rapist, and you think you can get that anything of the rapist out of that mother. But that baby belongs to the mother. And it's really funny that the pro-choice people will say that a man doesn't have any rights over that baby. It's the woman's baby until she's raped, and suddenly it becomes a rapist baby. We are so messed up. That's all I can say.
We are messed up. I want you to encourage us with a few positive words about marriage. I read on your Facebook page your document about how you and your husband nearly separated, or you did separate and you were getting back together, and how God spoke to you about what you were supposed to do. And as much as you didn't love him before, he put that love back in your heart. Can you share that story with us?
Sure. You know, the whole thing revolves around know what our Creator desires. You know, we can listen to everybody else regurgitate stuff, but we need to know from His Word, or in my case, I literally heard the voice of my creator. And I know that sounds kind of crazy to people, but he said, I want you to love him. And I thought, I don't love him. I hate him. And we were separated for a year and a half. So I said, you know, for you, I will do anything. So I called my husband up and I said, you know, I heard from God and this is the deal. I'm not going to be a loser. One, if you come back, or if you divorce me, I'll have peace in my house. Two, if you decide that you want to come back and you're still a jerk, then I will have half my bills paid. And if we both decide to do exactly what God has said to make marriage work, I'll be the happiest woman on earth. So this past February, we celebrated 30 years together. And I want to tell people, you might not like what you're supposed to be doing, but since God is our creator, Yehovah has made us, and he knows what it takes. You don't go to the engineer of any kind of equipment and tell the engineer how it's supposed to work, because he made it. He knows. Same with our creator. So there were times when I just didn't want to do it, but I thought, he told me to do it. I'm going to do it regardless. So after a month of just going through the motions, just constantly doing what a loving person would do, I woke up and I said, wow, I have the feelings. So don't wait for the feelings to do what's right. Do what's right, because then the feelings will come.
That's a good word. You know, I've had this conversation before with, I didn't actually say this out loud, but there was a friend of mine whose husband died, and I wanted to comfort her by saying, well, you know, it could have been worse. He could have had an affair.
Oh, yikes. Yeah. Well, that didn't happen with us, so I didn't have to deal with that.
Well, you know, we don't know what the future holds for anyone, and nobody's life is perfect. But I'll just say this much, that God has a way of weaving it all together. And for me, if my husband had an affair, he would wish he had died, because that's how bad it would be. But thankfully, that never happened to me either. But I know that when we obey the Lord, he makes it work out right. He makes it all right. No matter what happens, it's going to be good. And so I have this faith, hope, and confidence that we are all where we're supposed to be when we're doing the right thing. I was inspired by hearing you talk about how much you loved God, that you'd be willing to do anything for him. And that's exactly what we have to say, no matter what, even if we're living in Sodom and Gomorrah, and even if the rest of the country is going into tatters, because we've gotten so far off of the biblical standard. Share with us a little encouragement of, what do you say to people who also want to share your faith in God?
You know, I just tell people, don't wait for somebody else to tell you what to do. You know, go and read it yourself. It's in the Bible. We have everything there. So if you know the truth and you apply it, you will be set free. You won't have to worry about what your pastor said or anybody else said, because you know it. You've read it. And I pray that people hear the audible voice of our Creator. I don't know why that happened to me. I'm not anything special. I just know that I love him beyond reason, beyond everything. And I'm one of those crazy fanatics that just love him and love people.
If there's anything you could do over again, what would it be?
Wow, I would have read the Bible for myself when I was a young person and not relied on everybody else and stumbled around and felt terrible about who I was. And because if you're reading scripture, you know exactly who you are, that Christ died for all of us. That means we're of value. Each and every one of us are valuable beyond explanation.
Give us one last point of encouragement. If you could speak to everybody in America right now, what would you want to say?
I would say, stop relying on self. Everybody says you have to be self-motivated. You have to be self-this and self-this. Everything that is bad that's happening is called self fish. So when you're selfless, you think less about yourself and you think about others. Can you imagine a world where all we thought about was what other people felt as far as hurting? We would be able to help each other and we wouldn't be so confused about who we are, about our looks or our gender identity and all this other stuff. If you know who you are because of your creator and you're helping other people to know who they are, what a wonderful world this would be.
Yes, no kidding. Well, Judah, you have been a pleasure and a delight. I really have enjoyed gleaning some gems from your wisdom, and it means a lot to me. I hope that our listeners are encouraged as well, and I just want to thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much. And if anybody's interested in knowing more, they can go to choicesforlife.org.
That's choicesforlife.org. Thank you so much, Judah.
You. God bless you.
This has been another edition of Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, and I thank you for joining us. We're taking America back one family at a time. I sincerely hope you heard something that left you feeling inspired, motivated, and ready to engage our culture. If you enjoyed our show, you can find more at cynthiadavis.net. You can also find me on Facebook at Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Have a great week and make sure you come back next time for another edition of Homefront.